In the days before Cineplexes, when I was a boy, my father managed a single-screen movie theater on Main Street in the small Texas town where we lived. And in the darkness of that movie palace, I learned about good and evil, about light and dark, about good guys defeating bad guys, about greed and lust, about mercy and forgiveness, about truth and justice. I found transcendence and hope that maybe, just maybe, there was something more out there. And to this day, that's why I love movies. Happy 100th episode, Real World Theology. This is John Booker from Hollywood, California. Keep moving the conversation forward.
I have thoroughly enjoyed being on and listening to all the podcasts from Real World Theology. Mikey and company have done a phenomenal job of intersecting faith and culture and doing it in a way that just brings out the best in different people and their different views. I'm also very thankful for all the work that goes into this. It's just a great, great outfit. So bless you on your 100th podcast. Peace.
Welcome to a very, 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 very special episode of Real World Theology. We have somehow done it. We have made it to episode 100.
Yay!
See? So happy. It's quite the milestone for any podcast, and I am oh so proud of what we put together here at Real World Theology. This episode will be very different from any episode previous, as basically all our episodes are film and theology reviews for anyone who's, you know, been listening to basically anything we've done. This episode, we're going to actually do something many of you listeners have asked us to do for a while, but we really haven't had the occasion or just the time to really sit down and do this. And we thought episode 100 would be the perfect time to talk about who Real World Theology is and kind of how it got to be what it is today. Basically, a look behind the curtain. So, I'll start by introducing our staff team. You all know, hopefully me, if you've listened to any episodes, I am on every episode because I love talking about movies, and by sheer fortune of having started this, I schedule myself on every episode. To your chagrin, maybe, audience, I'm sorry.
What a jerk.
Yeah, I know, right?
A big microphone hog.
Also, I'm also, I think, the only one who really wants to do any of the editing, so by default, I get to do it.
That's probably true.
So, there's that. But, those people you hear are our staff team at Real World Theology, which is amazing to me to even say, staff team at Real World Theology. I mean, I'll get into this later, but when I started, I thought this would just be me for the long haul, just chipping away at the internet and my little corner of the world. And to find people, not just the staff, but contributors, writers, guests, anybody who's ever done anything for Real World Theology, that they've want to be a part of what we've got going on here is incredible. And I'm oh so grateful. And I hope that somehow, like I said, that little corner of the internet that I could have been chipping away at is now more like a boulder or something, you know, something bigger. And we're just connecting more people and networking and all that stuff. So with us tonight on the show are all of the actual official Real World Theology staff members, and I'll start by introducing Joshua Crabb.
Yay! Hey, everybody!
Josh is an editor, our first other editor, and a writer here at Real World Theology. So, Josh, if you would, or even if you don't want to, tell everyone.
Sorry, guys, I just came on to say woo, now I'm leaving.
Yep, that was it. That's actually what he does at Real World Theology, so that actually answers the question. All done. Thanks. On to the next person. Now, so Josh, what do you spend most of your time doing as an editor and a writer at Real World Theology? Kind of like what would people who come to our site or listen to the podcast kind of see your fingerprints on. And if you forget anything, I'll do my best to fill in the gaps.
Nice.
And the second question I want is the kind of fun question, which is, what are some of your favorite either real world theology moments or some of your favorite episodes, maybe before you came on staff or, you know, since you've been podcasting with us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was a listener of the show for a while before I joined up. So, some of the things that I do is pretty much every week I still farm out maybe once a month or sometimes more than once a month, which has been helpful. The top fives on Tuesdays. We kind of started off, you know, I was doing the written content when I first joined up throughout the week, like Tuesday through Friday. And while the Wednesdays kind of morphed into something else, pretty much what stayed consistent since I joined the site in 2014 was the top five Tuesdays, which I love. Great conversation starters.
Yeah, you can either blame Josh or be very happy at Josh. Any other
I hardly ever get it right. Trust me, this episode is going to be airing after my Tom Cruise one, and some people are going to be horribly disappointed in my choices.
Yeah, they are.
So I do the theater preview every single week. And what started off in the beginning is sort of like a Netflix pick where I did like more of a review style with Netflix Your Weekend that sort of morphed into a just – I was kind of thinking about more ways to get people involved, and it morphed into what we have now, which was originally Netflix Your Weekend and then sort of slightly changed again to Streaming Weekly, which is just some weekly picks from our contributors on the different streaming services because, you know, as Netflix starts to have more content and more original content and less outside content, other places like Amazon Prime and Hulu have actually picked up a lot of that great content. Mm-hmm. So that's morphed into Streaming Weekly. So I oversee those. I also am editing for our Reviewing the Classics series, which is just like I wasn't really expecting a lot out of it when I started. It was kind of just like, hey, it's a chance to review like super old movies. So, you know, I mean, like the first one we did was A Trip to the Moon, which, you know, it's from 1908. So that's, you know, really long time ago. Yeah. So but, it, you know, it's morphed into something where we have a column every other week. Which is totally great.
Yeah.
Have some fabulous people contributing to that, newer faces and more familiar people helping out with that. So that's been really great. Let's see. I mean, you know, I still do reviews. I like getting
I was going to say, don't forget that. I mean, like you're usually good for two or three solid reviews on top of all this other stuff you're doing.
Oh gosh. What's my problem? I have a movie problem. So I think this is just a roundtable to admit addiction to movies.
as long as it keeps content flowing to the site, you're the man.
Yeah, as long as your addiction fuels our passion, then it's not a bad thing.
They're gonna run me straight into the ground.
I want to say I think the one thing that you haven't mentioned so far that is really surprising to me.
Okay,
is that I think you're tag teaming some kind of series. On a weekly basis.
Oh yeah. So, right. So, anyways, trying my very best to find a way to basically write about Star Wars almost every single week on the site, Blaine and I decided to team up and go through Star Wars Rebels starting about this past January in the middle of season two, and we're finishing up the rest of season two and then moving on to season one. And then our hope is, we haven't really hashed out any concrete plans, but our hope is to talk about if not every episode, maybe just like different story arcs from the Clone Wars, which could be helpful to shedding light on different events that are taking place in some of the current Star Wars properties, whether that's Rebels or the movies or, you know, books or whatever. So anywho, that's another one. I really like doing that.
Well, cool. So I think you hit most everything, and you can do a search on the site for Josh Crabb, and you see that he is. I mean, one of it benefits from the fact that he's been with Real World Theology the longest outside myself. But I remember going onto the post page one time, and no, it wasn't the post page. It was the users. I went in there to create a user who was going to like guest post something, and on the user page, on the back end of the site, it also tells you how many posts people have posted. And I'm looking, and it's like, because at the beginning we posted everything as admin, and then I was like, oh, this is kind of, you know, not very professional. So I started posting almost everything as Fizz. And I was like, look at Fizz. Look how many things that I've written to the site. And then you go down like two notches, and it's like Josh Crabb, and he's posted like three times as many things as I have. I was like, he's only been here like a year. How's he posted three times the amount of content that I have?
He's taking over.
Yeah. I say, so if there's anything that that you like at Real World Theology, I think by volume, there's a 50% chance that Josh did it.
Most likely.
So
not to try and take too much credit for myself.
Well, so many of those things are bringing in other people too, because that mm-hmm. Streaming Weekly feature is great, because it's gotten me to really pay more attention to what's on Netflix, for example, and like what I should try to be watching, like to expand my film knowledge and stuff. So mm-hmm. I really like that feature just because it gets me looking at other things.
Yeah. Well, not to mention that it's given people an outlet to join in, you know, like right. it's one of the things that it's easiest to shoot out an email and be like, hey guys, you know, as we've already admitted, we all watch possibly too many movies, up for debate, whatever. And you know, allowing people to have this outlet. Because one of the things that I see people do all the time is you go into a room full of people, even if you know the people, but lots of times when you don't know the people, one of the first things people ask, unfortunately, is like, kind of, what do you do for a living? And then the second thing is like, so have you seen Blankety Blank on TV? Oh, man, I love that show. No, you should watch whatever. It's basically, people love recommending stories to each other, and it's basically just an outlet for us all to do that. So,
yeah. Usually people just get mad at me now because they'll be like, oh, yeah, did you see the latest Jacques Tati movie? And they're like, what are you talking about?
The burden.
Oh, never mind. Go see the Turtles again. Jeez.
The burdens of power.
I'm sorry.
So
should not disparage my beloved Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
The second part of that question, Josh, is you know, you've been, like I said, you've been with Real World Theology the longest outside of myself as a staff type person. So
yeah,
what have you had any moments that you go, gosh, that was my favorite thing, either the favorite article you posted, favorite episode, favorite thing that we've done? Just what's been your favorite part?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, I've kind of got some that fall outside of my time with Real World, because some of my favorite moments happened or episodes happened before I was a part, or just episodes that I haven't been a part of. But I mean, speaking strictly of the podcast, I must have, and these two kind of combined together, is I must have listened to the interview that you did with James Harleman early on in the show's life at least like a dozen times. And it was just because, I can get into later. A big reason of how we even got connected or I even found out about the show was basically I was like, you know, James Harleman's got to have a podcast out there. And sad news, he didn't when I was looking. But I found the interview with James, and so then I started listening to the other episodes around it, just starting back at episode one. I want to say this is probably like maybe almost at the year mark of the show. So that's definitely a highlight episode, and I feel like an episode that really started to help me see a little bit more of like what our philosophy is of watching movies is the episode that you and I know that Elijah was there when you guys were talking about Don John.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an episode that was really like, wow. Like I went and saw the movie and I was like, oh man, this movie could be horribly offensive to so many people, but the conversation behind it was so critical. And the message of the movie was, I bet millions of people were turned off to that movie because of its content, but the message of the movie was so profound and so interesting coming from a seemingly non-Christian standpoint, that it's just like more people need to see this movie just based on the fact of what message it's sending out there. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really, really great episode. And then just kind of piggybacking on both of those things, my favorite moment since I've joined is, you know, I mean, I got a chance to podcast with James Harleman, who's like basically like the guy that got me into kind of mashing up theology and movies early on in my Christian life. And so it was just – it was super cool to get together with him on Age of Ultron last year and just be able to talk with him and try my darndest not to sound like a moron.
Too bad. So,
at least you tried.
I know. I tried really hard. So that was definitely one of my favorite moments or episodes that we've had since then. Yeah, I mean, those are just some. I could probably go on with sharing a lot more.
No, that's good stuff.
I've got some, yeah.
So one of the things that I'm excited about this episode is I kind of threw out some very general questions to the staff team, and they did not tell me what their answers were. So I have no idea what people's favorite moments or the things, you know, the things that they're going to say. So I'm very interested to just kind of see the different perspectives that we all bring and our experiences and how they've kind of shaped what we have. So I hope that's similar to people listening.
Can I add one more thing just because people are going to get all over me if I don't add this? So if I don't get a chance to talk about Star Wars, I become a petulant child. So, you know, right when I joined the show and I knew that they were going to be doing a new Star Wars movie, I was like, you have to let me review The Force Awakens when it comes out. Like there, and I have to be on the podcast for it. There was like, I will give up everything else if I can be on that. So, it was definitely a highlight to get and go see the movie, to see it three times and then write a review basically on no sleep. I essentially went to the movie. I saw it twice, wrote the review, put it up and then went and saw the movie again. So it was like, and that was all like Thursday to Friday night. So I was just like, I was on no sleep and it was so awesome. And it was so great. And then it was
amazing dedication or insanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was both. It was, I'm just so surprised how coherent the review ended up coming out when I was literally writing it at 4 a.m. So, that was a definite highlight of my commitment to being able to get something out Friday morning as a review. But I love doing that. Can't wait to do it again.
Weren't deterred the first time.
No, that was great. Have you and Blaine arm wrestled over reviewing Rogue One? Is that all yours?
Josh already called it.
It's
in his Trello, though, I think, right? It's in your will, Josh, that if something happens to you, not that we want that to happen, but if something were to happen to you, I get Rogue One.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Blaine says with a suspicious tone.
Yeah. Not like that he's counting down the days to episode 8.
Just watch your back in December, Josh.
Nice. Ooh.
Yeah, everything goes out the window. But
I'm always watching my back because of Christmas, you know, Santa and stuff, but whatever.
Well, that takes us to our next person who was just chiming in. Blaine Grimes is a producer and a writer here at Real World Theology. And Blaine, I'll ask you the same starting question, kind of where can people see your fingerprints at Real World Theology? What do you spend most of your time doing?
Sure. So most of my time probably goes right now to my podcast, Real World Rewind, which if you're not listening to it, you should be. It's a lot of fun. We look at older movies because Mikey is busy trying to get all the movies that are coming out. So in Rewind, we have time to take a step back and get some older movies that that maybe they missed on Real World Theology or just haven't had time to do. So that's what I spend most of my time doing, you know, prepping for that, watching the movies for it, and editing it. I also write reviews here and there. And I bring some friends in every once in a while, and when I bring them in and my friends write, I will edit for them. So that's kind of what I do. That's, and I will say, though, that I think the thing that I'm best at in real-world theology is we have an editor board where once a month, Mikey will post all of the movies for the next month, and we get to go in and claim them to review them. And my specialty at Real World Theology is lying in wait for Mikey to post this board so I can go in and grab all the movies that Gene wants and then get
out. No joke, man.
So yeah, that's my area of expertise.
That's like a, it's like a mutant power at this point.
It totally is.
Like it's one of those things where I feel like there's a movie line somewhere where it's like, you know, it happens once and then it's just, you know, luck, and it happens twice, it's fortune, happens three times, it's skills. But basically every month, Blaine, like, I send the email to the entire staff and contributor team, which is a pretty large team now, which I'm exceptionally grateful for. And every time it's like I hit send and I immediately get a message from Blaine said, done.
That email has not yet cleared NSA eyeballs before Blaine has claimed his movie.
Exactly. I'm like, how is this possible? Like, I assume you walk around with like Trello up on your phone, like somewhere the first week of every month, and you don't do anything. Like your wife walks in, you're like, shh. It could be now. It could be now. Exactly. Oh, man.
Yeah, when I'm teaching my classes and stuff, I'm just like, okay, we got to take a break. The Trello board might open. It's great.
Oh, well, so Blaine, what are – well, actually, let me – before I ask you that second follow-up question, I do want to say, yeah, it's great to me to see and we'll talk about that a more in depth later, but to see how you've gone from writer – to like interested in something, and then you've done that too, and you've done it well, and you're like, it'd be cool to have a podcast, and now you're doing that, and it's just like, I don't know. I go back to the fact that I didn't ever think that there would be anybody who would kind of share this passion and want to work on real world theology with me, and then to have people who I've never met, like, I've actually never met any of you guys, and you'll be able to talk about where you kind of came from or where you're from later, but we've never actually all met in person, which blows my mind to see how well we're working together on some of these projects. So it's cool. Has it even been a year now, Blaine?
It's been a year and a couple of months.
Yeah. So like, so it just blows my mind how fast you've come along. The quality of writing you're contributing to the site and picking up Real World Rewind has just been great. So what are some of your favorite either moment, like I said, same question, moments, episodes, whatever, favorite things from Real World Theology?
I would second what Josh said about getting to be on the Force Awakens podcast. That was a lot of fun, and not to brag or show off or flex my muscles in front of Josh or anything like that, but I'd seen it four times before we podcasted, and I think he only had three. So, but it was a lot of fun. I didn't have to write the review, which I was glad, because I really don't think I could have done that, because I saw it at the earliest showing, so like the 6 or 7 p.m. the Thursday it came out, and then saw it at 2 a.m. that Friday morning. And then saw it in IMAX the next day. And then we traveled a good ways to go see my in-laws, and then took my in-laws to go see it the next day. And then we did the podcast. In fact, I think the day we took my in-laws to see it. So I hadn't had a lot of sleep. Took me about – say it again.
Can we mute you now? Quit your bragging.
I think it actually – it took me probably a week to recover from Star Wars and that nice. That just – irregular sleep routine that I got myself into. So the Force Awakens podcast was a lot of fun, and that was really special. I guess Mad Max also sticks out to me because that was the first podcast I was on, and that was a great time. I remember it was me, you, Mikey, and Laura, and there might have been someone else. Was Josh on?
Yeah, Mark was on.
Mark was on. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so we had an extra person because it was a little bit more popular of a movie.
Right. That was fun. The four episodes that we have of Rewind have all been fun. So those are some of my, I'm kind of biased, but those No, but I really think the one that just came out, at least today, the day we're recording, that just came out on the Shawshank Redemption, I had a lot of fun doing, and I don't know, it feels like maybe I'm starting to get more acclimated to doing this. Not that I'm there or anything like that by any means, but I really enjoyed the Shawshank Redemption episode, and so it's been fun to do those, even though 4 or 5 episodes in, mm-hmm. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a great time.
No, man, recording podcasts. It's I want to say it's like getting tattoos or something. Like you just have one, and then you want all the podcasts. Because once you realize how much fun it is to talk about something that you're interested in, which is what most people want to do with all their time anyway, you're like, what else do I know everything in the world about that other people need to know? And it's just the list is never ending, really.
Well, it's for me, it's like this idea of you get to plan something, and you like, you know, as you're talking, you're trying to transition and make sure that you're staying on track as far as time goes, mm-hmm. doing a 30-minute podcast and everything. So it's fun to get to work out those kinds of things.
Awesome. Well, that brings us to our last, but definitely not least.
Definitely not.
Gene. That has a last name. Would this be the chance? I have so many more versions of your last name. Why would I use this episode to say it right?
Yeah, why would you?
Exactly. Goose and Pfeffer is of the Gene variety, is an editor and a writer here at Real World Theology. And Gene, this question may surprise you.
Oh, boy.
But what do you do in theology?
You were actually trying to think of something there, weren't you?
No. I was trying to make you think I was thinking of something.
Okay.
Making you sweat. Don't worry. We're not going to get off pseudo script too much. Yeah. So what are people going to find Gene's fingerprints on at Real World Theology?
Well, if you are on our page, not the group where we kind of get into more discussion, but on the page. If you're seeing weekly posts on there, like the Movie Quote Monday or the Screenshot Saturday, that kind of stuff, that's all me. I set that up a month or two in advance. I try to. So that's what I do regularly. I do a lot of our Twitter interaction. I try to as well. So if you follow us on Twitter and you get some sort of standard looking response, thanks for the follow. That's me.
Very personal.
Yeah. I handle our new Moral Dilemma Dialogue feature, where we kind of, if you're not familiar with it, we take a movie which has a very pertinent moral dilemma on display, and we take two people and kind of they kind of take sides on that dilemma, and they explain why they would choose one way or the other, and they can do it from a Christian perspective or a worldly perspective. And so we have – the hope is to generate like a big dialogue from that, right? Like so comments following that post and get people kind of discussing back and forth and seeing who they agree with and so forth. We've done two movies in that feature so far, and I'm hoping that takes off a lot more. Let's see. I did the Walking Dead reviews, and I'll continue that as season 7 picks up in the fall.
It basically means you'll always have a job, because apparently The Walking Dead can go on forever, right?
Of course. The dead are always walking. So that'll be me for ad infinitum. I handle some editing and posting of my old crew, Let There Be Movies, which now is down to Amber and Trace, I think, and maybe Nate. He may come on board, but I may get into that a little bit later. So I'm helping get some of their stuff up. I do my own monthly reviews. I think that's about it.
No, I think you covered the big stuff. You know, social media master. I like the Moral Dilemma Dialogues, and I'm very excited about getting more of those, because in a review, people have, you know, like 600 to 1,000 words to kind of give people like a critical and kind of thematic overview of a film. And on the podcast, we have the chance to talk between three different people, like all the things that we could possibly think of about the film. And sometimes we get to, you know, hit on something for a little bit longer than another. But, you know, you're still constrained to time and you're casting a pretty wide net. But in the Moral Dilemma dialogue, I think it almost is the concentrate version of what we ultimately want to do. It's like the no frills. We're not worried about critical this or, you know, who was starring in it, that. It's like, let's slice right into the heart of the issue, a specific issue, and let's really examine it and see why people are falling on both sides of this thing. So, I think it's just got much like the infiniteness of you being able to do Walking Dead reviews, the Moral Dilemma dialogues have infinite possibility to explore some of the themes in probably the most controversial or thinking movies that are out there. So that's exciting.
Yeah. I'm on board there. I hope we can really dig deep down in those. And like you said, get conversations going more than just surface level stuff. Like, don't worry about the Hollywood about it. What's the movie really, really hitting at? What's it trying to dig into? And I hope we can do that on those Moral Dilemma dialogues.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, the longer it goes on, we continue to hope that people will start requesting specific movies, and that'll be even better because then we're having the conversations people are really kind of, you know, turning their wheels about. So, shifting gears, Gene. You know, same question again. What have been some of your favorite parts about real world theology, you know, in any form?
If I had to pick, I have two episodes that really jump out at me in my mind. The first is the episode you did on the first season of Daredevil. Mm-hmm. And I can't even recall who you had on that.
It was Jared Griffin.
Okay.
They'll be back for season two.
Okay, great. So I loved the first season of Daredevil, and I almost equally loved the second season. But one of my favorite parts about that first season was the speech given in the paddy wagon in the truck as they're taking Kingpin away, and he's relaying the story of the parable of the Good Samaritan. And he's talking about always wondering who he was in that parable. And I just thought that was such a strong scene. And you guys really highlighted that scene. And I thought you broke it down really well. And I really appreciated the depth at which you went into that, that just that one scene alone out of the whole season, just that one scene, just breaking that down. I really liked it. Mm-hmm. And then also more recently, I really liked your episode on Batman v Superman, more so not because of how any of you felt about the movie, but more so the like gauntlet dropping debate that could have been, that could still be between James and JR on Pa Kent, because I loved that. I wanted them to just like go at it, you know.
You're excited because they had more of a reason to fight than Batman and Superman had to fight in the movie.
There you go. All we need to do is for those two to find out that their mothers have the same name, and that'll be over.
No, I think that's one of my favorite things, not specifically that episode, but the fact that when you talk about film, one of the best things is almost every story, since it connects with people on a different level or different ways, because everyone's coming from their own past, their own ideas, their own things that they're struggling with or confident in. The things that you think you're going to talk about are not always the things you're going to talk about. And some of the unexpected conversations, like nowhere in my show notes for Batman vs. Superman were, let's argue about Pa Kent, you know?
Yeah. But, discuss his motivation.
Exactly. But ultimately, like, that played a big part in what we saw in the sequel, and it could be addressed, and I thought it was great. I mean, I did have to, you know, make sure people weren't throwing fists, you know. This isn't a Major League Baseball game, so there's no calls for that. So
I would love like a part B of that podcast where those two just sit down and like maybe scripted, maybe not, but just hash it out, just debate that thing, because I personally, I'm team James on that. I thought that Paul Kent's decisions on how to direct Clark, you know, as he's growing up, mm-hmm. were understandable and everything. But JR was making some really good points. It's like some very, just in JR fashion, just very blunt, quick points. And it was great. I loved it.
Well, I would say this, more than them continuing the conversation in a part B or an extras or a minisode or anything like that, I think the perfect place for it would be in a Moral Dilemma dialogue.
Oh, there you go.
Boom.
Running it down.
Was that the last one, Gene?
Yeah, that'll be it for now. I've got another thing to mention, maybe later.
Are you sure? Because I assumed that your favorite moment in all of real world theology history was when you decided to scurry on the iTunes, because I imagine you scurrying to do this, and being the first person to give us 4 out of 5 stars instead of 5 out of 5 stars as an iTunes rating, you know?
The first person.
Oh, man. I had some holy words in tongues when I saw that review. It's like, oh, I really like this show. 4 out of 5 stars. I'm like, I hate you. I hate you so much. This is my soul. Why are you crushing me?
Hey, a 4 out of 5 is good, man. Listen, if I give a movie a 4 out of 5, if I give a movie a 4 out of 5, that's like very good on my scale.
Yeah, I wish iTunes ratings scale was the same as a movie scale. You basically, iTunes is almost like a pass fail. It's like when you call up customer, what was it I called customer support on one time? Anyway, I call customer support and they're like, yeah, they're going to call you. They're going to ask how we did. Basically, the only thing we get like credit for is perfect scores. So, you know, you give us a 9, it's the same thing as giving us a 1. So,
ouch.
You might as well just give us a 1 or a 10. You know, I hope I fixed your problem. I hope it's a 10. If it's not, let me know. I'll fix it. I don't know why he was talking like this, but. So I assume, however, probably Time Warner Cable or something is how iTunes also rewards you for reviewing shows.
Well, let me explain myself. I gave it a 4 because, and I commented on that on my review. I said there are times in the episodes or in a string of episodes where it's pretty light on theology. Right. So mm-hmm. theology is in the title. And I'm like, okay, they're going to get down to some theological points that these movies are bringing out. And it's going to be great. They are great. I still enjoyed listening to them, even when it was light on theology, but I was still looking for that. So I wrote that review and I made that comment. And I think you and I talked, I don't know, a couple months later or something. We were sharing reviews between our two sites, and you brought it up, and I had mentioned that. But at that time that we finally talked, there had been 2 episodes in a row where I felt like the show overall, your podcast overall, kind of turned the corner and got into a better habit of continually touching on theological things that movies bring out. And that was I'm pretty sure they were back to back. You talked about Unbroken and you talked about Selma. And I think Laura was on both of those, if I'm not mistaken.
I think she was on Unbroken.
Okay.
I think Selma was, I don't know how I'm remembering this. I've actually had a running joke for the last like 6 or 7 episodes that I can't remember anybody's on, but for some reason Selma was John Booker and JR and Clay.
Actually. Okay. Yeah. So I felt like in those 2 episodes, you guys really got into the meat of what the movies were talking about. And I love the conversation. And I really felt like there was a tonal shift, a topical shift. And it's been all 5 out of 5s from there, Mikey. And I changed that review, by the way. It's 5 out of 5 now.
No pressure.
And I did note how I previously rated the show 4 out of 5 stars for this or that reason. So
I like how thorough you were. try to figure out how to respond to that, I guess.
Yeah.
And
well, I mean, I'm sure when you started the show, like you had the idea to start the podcast, you know, you call your site and everything Real World Theology. You intend to hit on all those things. You want to like look at the big picture items in all these movies. So like when you started, what was your, like, what'd you have in mind? What was the brainchild behind this?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, Gene. What a great question.
Amazing segue, wasn't it?
So I don't even know where to begin to round out that question, because I think there's two different things. There's like the road to Real World, and then there's what I've seen seemingly be most beneficial. And in the beginning, there were no podcasts, and the world was sad. It was covered in darkness, and no one had anything for their ears. And I remember I was hanging out with a contributor to the show, Mark Wingerter, a lot, and we were just, I think we were both in like a creative kind of rut. Like neither of us had like an outlet for lots of the things we enjoyed doing. And we were sitting down watching football at a sports bar one day, and we were, you know, commenting on the game as sports ball patrons do. And we turned to each other and said, we know more about what's going on than the announcers. Like, we're calling plays, you know, before they're happening. We're confused at decisions being made. And we said, you know what? I bet if we just sat around and talked about football, we would learn some people some things. And we kind of laughed it off and ha ha ha. And then I remember that night I was laying in bed next to my wife, and we just had a lot of conversations about like creative outlets and things that we were prioritizing in our life, and wondering like if we had time to do this or time to do that, or where, you know, basically where we should put our time and effort into things. And I said something just so dumb, one of those self-serving things, like, I bet if Mark and I had a podcast about this, it would be the best. I could easily do it. I just have to do this, this, and this. And she said, you keep saying that, but why don't you just do it? And I was like, oh man, that was like bluff called, right? That's one of the things I love most about my wife, because, you know, she just knows me well. She knows exactly when to press, right? And I think most spouses are like that, you know, on both sides of the relationship. And so I did it. So me and Mark set out. We started a football podcast called Let Pylons Be Pylons. And we did that podcast for 2.5 years. And we got to 100 episodes. And I did some analytics. And I realized that after 2.5 years and of a more or less weekly podcast, Mark and I had racked up a total of 12 listeners. So that was the depressing part, right? But the cool part was it finally let us kind of get some of our creative juices flowing. And it was during this time that I had found a lot of the older James Harlan, you know, Josh, you talked about this earlier, those presentations that those film and theology events that James Harlan had done during his time up at Mars Hill in Seattle. And I was desperately searching. I was like, where is his podcast? And it was nowhere. It was nowhere to be found. And I said, oh my gosh, well, I don't know near enough people talking about film and theology, or, you know, the thematics of film. I saw a large group of people doing critical reviews of film. Yeah, everyone's a critic. So many film review podcasts. And I went and looked, and almost I'm not saying there weren't, because there are things like More Than One Lesson. Tyler Smith, who's been on the show, he has had More Than One Lesson going for years, like years before Real World Theology started. So I don't want to pretend like there was no one out there doing it, but it was pretty hard to find someone reviewing films from a Christian perspective that wasn't just telling you what was bad about the film. You know, there was a number of people doing the focus on the family. And it's not that there's not a place to know kind of the content of a film. So knowing if you can show your kids or it's a good family film, or if maybe depending on, you know, your discernment, if it's something that you should even spend your time watching. But no one's really engaging with film in a similar way to what I would say many of us Harleminians have kind of saw James doing. So I said, you know what? I would love to do something, because I know a lot of people who are really into telling stories. I know a lot of people who are into thematic evaluation. I know a lot of people who are into theology, like really into theology. And I know a lot of people who make movies or write movies or film movies, you know, who are just really critically interested, who also are Christian and see the world from, and see these stories being told from a different angle. Not a lot of them were local, but I knew them. And I was like, maybe what if, because I love podcasting at that point. Like I said before to Blaine with the tattoo thing, it's like once you have a podcast, you want to have all the podcasts. And I said, why don't I try to start this site where we talk about this stuff? And I describe it to people who write for the show, and I describe it, you know, to the staff and everyone since what I was saying to Gene a little bit earlier, kind of what I think works best. And that is like this pendulum. And on one side is a purely critical review. Like, these actors were terrible, this script was awful, but the cinematography was amazing. You know, like all these technical aspects that you get right everywhere. And on the other end is the like a straight examination of the content. You know, acting, you know, who cares? It was, what were they trying to say in this movie? Basically like an issue review. And somewhere, because the pendulum never ever goes up to either side fully, it swings somewhere in the middle. What happens if I can find a whole bunch of people who want to talk about the quality of a film and the quality of the content of that film? What would that look like? And so I tried to start modeling this. And on February 5th, 2013, I launched Real World Theology and I started, I think every couple of weeks I was putting out a written review, just trying to hit, for me personally, hit that exact center, talking about the things the film did right critically, talking about some of the themes that were going through it and how it kind of connected with people, especially from a Christian perspective. And then all the while trying to get a list of movies coming out that year, trying to garner some guests, because honestly, the only people I really knew when the podcast started were the people here. You know, I was like, well, my wife, you know, a bunch of people who'd really never been on podcasts. Again, my friend Mark, you know, who I did Let Pylons Be Pylons with, he was really into film and, you know, theology as well. Griffin, Kale, who's also a contributor to the site. I think him and Mark were the first guests on the show. And I just love these conversations that we were having. And I was like, if we put a mic down, I think people would be interested. So then on June 5th, 2013, actually by the time when we post this episode, it'll be a few days shy of 3 years that this podcast has been running. And that just kind of blows my mind. We've had so many people involved in these conversations. I mean, there's lots of ways that we could do this show. There's, you know, it could be me and one other person, and we could do the show all by ourselves every time. I can't have an occasional guest. It could just be me talking extemporaneously, which no one would listen to, not even me. You know, like, but realizing what I think I'm good at. And the thing that I noticed was I love getting at what people like about movies. So I'd much rather have, you know, Josh and Gene on, or Mark and Laura, or, you know, JR, whoever, all the people that have been involved with this podcast, some of my pastors, Alan, Elijah, Lovejoy, these guys who love watching film and they love just kind of breaking it down and asking them what they loved about the film. And then realizing there's way more there than the cool explosion towards the end. There's almost always something going on. And I think people have really connected with that. And some of the highest compliments that I've ever gotten about Real World Theology were people who came up to me and said, I was listening to the episode on, you know, whichever movie the other day in my car, and I started talking because I kept trying to jump in because I felt like I was just part of the conversation. And sometimes that works great. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes the guests who are on are more critically minded than they're theologically minded. Sometimes they're more theologically minded than they are critically minded. You know, I would not hesitantly, not in any kind of malicious way, but like someone like Elijah Lovejoy, who a lot of people really enjoy when he's on the show, he is theological. He wants to jump right into like the thematics of it. You know, he'll say, oh, I really like the, you know, the acting of this part. But, you know, he's like, when this happened, like, think about, you know, he's all theme. And then someone like Mark, who wants to write movies and wants to film movies, he's almost always thinking critically, you know, like, yeah. Like, how did the story unfold? How was the dialogue terrible? Was it believable? You know, what kind of shots did they choose? And so, you know, we have people all over that pendulum, and I think it makes for the most interesting conversations. Unfortunately, not very consistent conversations, because sometimes, like, I remember talking about Guardians of the Galaxy, and no matter what I did, we were just going to talk about how fun that movie was. You know, like, there were some, you know, pretty surface level themes to that movie, but we were just going to talk about how fun it was. But on the other hand, Gene, like you mentioned, how can you talk about a movie like Selma and not talk about the theological implications of the life of Martin Luther King Jr.? Hey guys, I just wanted to interrupt for a little bit because even though we had a great conversation with the staff talking about the ways that we're involved, we really wanted to acknowledge the fact that there are so many more people involved in making Real World Theology what it is. So I sent out an email. I tried to contact as many people, especially our contributors, which you can find over at Real World Theology, people who are producing content on a monthly basis and are definitely part of the beating heart of Real World Theology. I sent out this email. I asked a couple questions like, why do you love film? How did you get involved with Real World Theology? What, you know, what's your favorite film? What's your favorite line from a film? And I asked even if some people could impersonate it. We got some great responses. I even asked if you could be a character from any movie, what would it be and why? And all this in hopes that you would get more insight into the people that are making Real World Theology what it is. So here's a couple of those. I think they're really cool and a lot of fun. You'll hear from all sorts of people. Matt Nunn, who does our voiceover stuff, Mark, Laura, Amber, gosh, just so many people. So I hope you enjoy those, and then we'll get back to the conversation.
Okay, I'm going to start from the beginning. What I love about movies is a lot of things, but I think what I love most is that they're always there to transport me. And, you know, just give me an adventure, take me to a place I've never been before, or really just allow me to explore something about myself or about humanity. You know, they're fun, they're exciting, they're dramatic, there are a lot of things, and that covers a lot of facets of, you know, being a human and our emotions and stuff. So I love that they're just always there to do that. How did I first get involved with Real World Theology? Well, Fizz and I used to have a podcast about the NFL called Let Pylons Be Pylons, and I would just like for that to be known that that podcast existed, and we actually did 100 episodes of that podcast, believe it or not, but so the transition over to Real World was very natural. I've known Fizz for a long, long time. And I hosted Le Pylons, and he hosts Real World Theology. And so it's always fun working with Fizz, and now with everybody at Real World, it's become a really cool thing to be a part of and experience. And so it was really nice, and it's just as fun as doing our wonderful NFL podcast, Let Pylons Be Pylons. My favorite film is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And I like a lot of movies, but it's hard to imagine how Eternal Sunshine will ever be unseated as my favorite. And the reason why it's my favorite is because it takes my favorite genre, sci-fi, with very heavily sci-fi concepts, and really just teaches a lesson about the eternality of love and how love will never die despite what you dream up that you can do to it. It will always find you. It will always heal you, which is a very base human concept to wrestle with and understand, and it does it so well and so uniquely, and it's just really cool. It's a great movie. And that's why it's my favorite. My favorite line, I got to go with a line that always, to this day, gives me shivers of excitement for the adventure ahead. It has been doing that every time I hear it, and every time I have heard it since I first saw the movie in the theaters back in the very early 90s. The movie is Hook, and the line goes like this. Have to fly. Have to fight, have to crow, have to save Maggie, have to save Jack. Hook is back. All right, I gotta add a few more lines here because, it's hard to pick a favorite line. So here's some dodgeball lines, one of my favorite movies of all time. Necessary? Is it necessary for me to drink my own urine? No. But I do it anyway, because it's sterile and I like the taste. Nobody makes me bleed my own blood. Nobody! If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. Dodgeball is a sport of violence, exclusion, and degradation. You gotta learn the 5 D's of dodgeball. Dodge, duck, dip, dive and dodge. This is Patches O'Houlihan saying, take care of your balls and they'll take care of you. If I could be a character from any movie, I'm going to choose Wolverine because I just love Wolverine. I would love to be able to get away with his attitude and just, you know, I mean, the muscles and the healing factor is cool, but, you know, it's Wolverine, it's Logan, you know, he's got that attitude, that swagger, the cigar always in his mouth. I would like to be that, yes, very much.
Hey, this is J.R. Forresteros, and I'm a regular contributor at Real World Theology and a guest co-host. You can usually find me at the Storymen podcast or at the Don't Split Up Horror podcast, and I blog at NorvalRogers.com. I love movies because they're stories, and stories are always a better way to get us thinking, to get us asking good questions, to get us having great conversations than pretty much any other medium. I love written stories, and I really love the visual storytelling that we see in film. It's such a powerful platform to bring people together to have these great conversations. I first got in Real World, Mikey and I met online, and he invited me to come on as a co-host, and since I blog a lot of films at Norval Rogers already, he asked me to occasionally kick in a review over there. So I love Real World Theology, I love getting to be on it as often as I can, and I just really enjoy the whole team over there, all the friends I've made through the podcast, and getting to hear everyone's perspective on these films and on faith and how those play together. So I'm looking forward to at least 100 more episodes, and hopefully I'll get to even be on a few of them. It's hard for me to pick a favorite film of all time, but I think the one that I can watch the most over and over and over again is the Coen Brothers classic, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? That film has so many amazing characters in it. The soundtrack is phenomenal, and the dialogue is whip smart and lightning fast. And I just love that film. I love the way it presents guys who are trying to be good guys and just failing over and over and over again. I love the rich texture of the world that the Coens built, and it's just tremendously good fun. It's a really rewarding journey to go on with these characters, and it's all based on the Odyssey, so it's hard to go wrong. If I had to impersonate my favorite line from cinema history, it's probably the Joker from The Dark Knight when he says, "Kill you? I don't want to kill you. What would I do without you? You complete me." And if I could be any character from any movie, that's really a tough one. You know, I'd want to say the genie from Aladdin because it seems like he can do a lot of really cool stuff. But honestly, I think I'd love to be Thor. I'd love to have Mjolnir, the hammer made of Uru metal. And I think it'd be really fun to take my hand at battling dark elves and, sitting on the throne of Asgard and fighting with my dad, Odin. And I don't know. I think I'd love to be Thor.
I love being drawn into new worlds or environments. I love that film has opportunity to explore all kinds of ideas and investigate different aspects of humanity or the world. I love how film incites wonder of all kinds. Science fiction is my favorite genre because it offers some of the best opportunities to explore big ideas, because you can go anywhere, encounter anything. Really, the possibilities are endless. You aren't bound by a lot of the rules that we are confined by in our everyday lives. Film gives you freedom to kind of explore outside those boundaries. And, books do that as well, but film can just use a broader range of the senses. It's more rich and more sensory. Historically, I feel like it's been difficult for me to see big thematic overtures in film and even in books, which I have always felt embarrassed about as an English teacher. That was the hardest part for me teaching literature. But real world theology, listening to it and participating in it, has really given me the opportunity to strengthen that part of me. It really, practice does make perfect. The more that I look for those things and talk about those things and hear other people talking about them, the clearer they become to me as I'm watching a film. And I love that now. I love being able to see a film and seeing all those layers at once, not even really having to dig that deep for them. They're so much more obvious to me now. I think that reading literature is enriched by knowing tropes, knowing techniques that you can see through all works. And that's definitely true for film. I'm so grateful that real world theology has given me that. It's really enriched my experience with entertainment in general. The first podcast I was ever on was for Joss Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing. And that's probably the only one that I can think of, besides maybe The Princess Bride, that Mikey could have gotten me enough courage to go on. I made so many notes, pages and pages of notes. I was so scared that I would not have something to talk about, or I wouldn't be able to articulate what I was thinking. I'm always much better in writing than I am in person. And it was so much fun. I got to talk about something I really loved. Not just Whedon's film, but also Shakespeare's work. And it really did give me the bug to be on again, but also the confidence to be on again. Mikey just has a great sense of comfort. He offers a great sense of comfort. He never makes you feel like you have to perform, or never makes you feel nervous. He has a great way of making people feel comfortable. And he was able to do that for me so that I could just relax and enjoy myself and enjoy being a part of that conversation. I have a lot of favorite films, but I'm going to go with one that I can watch endlessly and never get tired of. I can put it on anytime. It's for all occasions. and I know every single word of it by heart, and that's The Princess Bride. When I was a little girl, I fell head over heels in love with Wesley. He was my first crush. And I just loved the film. Of course, you know, that my maybe 10-year-old self didn't have a good sense of why that was, but I ended up sitting down at some point and recording it word for word in this little journal. And I think when I think back on that, I realized that I was in love with the language that was being used. Every character is so distinct, the way that they talk, the kinds of language that they use, the tone. And they all have a great balance between seriousness and silliness, adventure and romance. The characters are so dimensional. There's something to love about all of them, even if they're villainous or pompous. And Wesley, let's face it, is just swoon-worthy. Yeah, it's such a gorgeous balance of romance and wit, adventure and reflection, and I could watch that movie forever. An impersonation of my favorite line, drop your sword. Or, of course, the ever the ever popular to the pain speech, which even now when I look back on it, I realize it was one of my favorite parts of the film. And you know, I could talk endlessly about why that is now, but oh man, it's just so wonderfully redemptive. There's so much justice there. Wesley getting back after all that's been done to him. Wrong. Your ears you keep, and I'll tell you why. So that every shriek of every child at seeing your hideousness will be yours to cherish. Every babe that weeps at your approach, every woman who cries out, dear God, what is that thing, will echo in your perfect ears. That is what to the pain means. It means I leave you in anguish, wallowing in freakish misery forever. I think I'd like to be a mix between Elizabeth Bennet and Furiosa from Mad Max. They both have an incredible strength of character, but a sensitivity too. They are pretty fierce and intelligent. They're also very gentle in a way, care about others. Maybe I want the ability to kick butt whenever I want to, but also live in this very beautiful, genteel world of Elizabeth reading books in a garden.
What do I love about movies? You know, I've always, you know, I think everybody looks at movies as an opportunity for escape to some degree or another. A lot of times we will talk about, oh man, that movie was just so good because of the creative way that they built story and built a world and built a universe that I've never been to before and will never be able to go to. You talk about movies like Guardians of the Galaxy is a really cool example of that, where they built an entire universe really quickly, really even apart from the Marvel universe. And I think it's such a cool way of doing things. But along with that, I think that they just do such a fantastic job of melding story and visuals that really outside of them, only comics, I think, are able to do in that way. Because they do, they encompass everything. You got the stories, you have the visual, you have the sound. And so they do such a fantastic job of just introducing art in this really all-encompassing way. They're beautiful and they're interesting, and they show a picture of creation and this kind of common grace that you don't really find anywhere else in art, at least to my knowledge. I mean, I just think that the way that they combine all three is such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing. So yeah, that's really why I love movies and why I continue to go back to them time and time again. I'm not sure how the conversations got started, but I do remember that I was a part of Rural Theology from the very beginning. Mikey and Mark and I did some of the very first podcasts together, and you know, Mikey was quickly gathering friends and people in his community to himself to do these podcasts. But he and Mark had been doing fantasy football and just all around football. Sorry, not just fantasy. It was all around football podcast called Let Pylons Be Pylons. And then Mikey transferred into this film thing as they began thinking about writing a script together. And so I, you know, they knew that I loved film, and Mark and I had connected through music stuff, and we'd always talked movies and different films and stuff. So, yeah, it was really enjoyable. And, you know, since then I've kind of, taken more of a role of like, okay, I'm going to stick to exactly what I know and really only what I know when it comes to films about superheroes and films, done by guys like Fincher and Anderson and some other directors that I really care about and love. But, you know, at the same time, my experience has always been really good. Mikey and the whole team now at Real World, Josh and Blaine and all those guys, they do such a fantastic job to encourage and really push us to produce as much as we want without really feeling the pressure that we have to do this. This is not for pay. This is not, you know, I'm not making money off this, but it is nice to have a forum and a place for, to share what I'm thinking about, especially when it comes to film. So my experience has always been really good and really enjoyable. My favorite film is pretty easy for me. I love Wes Anderson, and out of all of his films, Life Aquatic isn't the most impressive, or I think actually his like critically best, but it is just such an amazing, amazing story. You have the story of this guy who is really laughed at and mocked and ridiculed by the world. Even some of the people on his team and in his crew. And he overcomes all of that in search of this thing that affected him so greatly. I think it's such a cool picture of the gospel that we really just go and seek out the creator, that once we met that creator, he changed us so drastically. And for Steve Zissou, as once he met this shark who killed his friend, it changed his life so drastically that he had to go find it again. And his intention was to go and destroy it, but instead he goes and just stands in awe of it, really. It's really a beautiful film. And I think, I mean, with all of Wes Anderson's films, they have a really particular and unique style and flash. And a lot of people make fun of it because, like, oh, he does the same exact thing every movie. And you know, at the end of the day, he does, but there are countless directors that do the exact same thing every movie and are really loved and well-known for it. It just doesn't look as unique and, I guess, maybe hipster as some people would say, as some of Wes Anderson's films. And so that's really why I love his stuff. They're really unique and really different and stand out. And you know from the moment that you see a film of his or a film spoofing his, a lot of the, like the SNL stuff and things like that that have tried to recreate his things. You know, that look, that mentality. My favorite quote is a pretty obvious one. And honestly, it's probably one of the most quotable movies in my opinion of all time. And I just love, all that Rob Reiner did in Princess Bride. I think it's such a really quirky, really funny film. Once you realize that it's a joke and it's a comedy and it's meant to be funny. But I do love the scene where Cary Elwes' character is climbing up the wall and Andre the Giant's like, he's got pretty good arms. And then, of course, the inevitable line is, he didn't fall? Inconceivable. You keep using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means. Any character, any movie. Well, since I was a kid, you know, like most kids who grew up in the 90s, I loved Harry Potter. I think that to this day, it continues to be one of the best stories and worlds ever created. And I would argue that with pretty much anyone. And for me, that character of Harry is such a complex one, but really just, I think it would be so cool to live as him and live in that world, and pretty much anybody in that world. Maybe except for the ones that die or get maimed by mythical creatures.
Okay, what is it about movies I love? I love that they can take you somewhere else for a little while. I love that they tell you stories about people and places you never would have seen or imagined otherwise. I love that they make you cry. Well, they make me cry. They make me laugh. I love they made me experience a whole spectrum of human emotion in a very short period of time. And movies are just so special that way. In 2 hours, you can feel so many different emotions that normally take, you know, days or weeks for us to go through. Movies are just really unique. Let's see. I got involved with Real World Theology from I came over from, you know, the Let There Be Movies blog, and Gene, who ran Let There Be Movies and who now is, you know, an editor on Real World Theology, I went to high school with him, and we, through a really random series of events, reconnected recently, and he found out I went to film school and asked me to start writing, and it's gone from there. The rest is history. My favorite film, that is a tough one. I have kind of a top 50. If I have to pick one, I usually go with It Happened One Night. Why? Because it is perfect. It is a perfect movie. It's wonderfully funny. It's so touching. And, I mean, it is kind of the foundation for the romantic comedy formula. And, of course, you know, Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert are just incredible. My favorite line from cinema history. I don't know if it's my favorite, but it was definitely the first one that came to mind, which is, "Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die." If I could be a character from any movie, well, I have the most in common with probably Hermione Granger from Harry Potter and Elizabeth Bennet from Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. But out of the two, I'd probably pick Hermione if I could be a character from a movie, because she's a wizard. And why not?
A couple of years ago, I realized that maybe one of the reasons I have such a heart for movies is because I associate them with visiting my dad. He would come visit on the weekends and take us to see the movies. Movies like Batman with Michael Keaton and Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. Another reason might be because I was an awkward kid and I didn't really fit in. And I would imagine myself being these characters, being as cool as Marty McFly or being as cool as one of the Lost Boys. I mean the vampires, not the kids from Neverland, even though they were still very cool, much cooler than I was. I got involved in real-world theology because Mikey invited me to be a part of the episode where he talked about Birdman. I had a really good time. I felt like Mikey and Mark really provided a safe place to share ideas. I hope to be on another one in the future. That would be fun. You know, this is cruel, this question. Especially if you're to ask somebody who really loves movies what their favorite movie is. That's pretty messed up. I think he just wanted to hear us ramble. It's funny because my favorite movie would not exactly be the one that I would watch most often. What I would watch typically is Dumb and Dumber or Beetlejuice or The Wedding Singer or Gross Point Blank, you know, lighter movies. But what I believe to be the most well-crafted film of our generation is Seven by David Fincher. I just think that it's a great story. It's well performed. It's shot beautifully. The pacing, the music, everything, it just makes a great film. And it's also very truthful to what human nature is. It's very honest. Yeah, I think that's probably what I would call the best film, in my opinion. I don't know, that's a tough one. Yeah, if I were stranded on a desert island with one movie, it wouldn't be Seven. It would just creep me out. But I think it's a great film. If I was to be a character in any movie, I think it would be Ferris Bueller. Aside from his compulsive lying, of course. Because he's got his friend, he's got the girl, and he has a day off. I think that's pretty cool. Okay, well, I can't exactly decide on which line is my favorite, so I'll give you a few, and you can just put in there whichever one you want. How about this? Okay. Ernest Hemingway once wrote, "The world is a fine place and worth fighting for." I agree with the second part.
I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how this is going to begin.
Come on, Cohagen. You got what you wanted. Keep these people here.
What are we doing here, Harry? We got no food. We got no jobs. Our pets' heads are falling off.
You don't have to beat me, Michael. You just gotta try and keep up.
There's one thing about Santa Carla I never could stomach. It's all the damn vampires.
Are these all your lunches? You mean you're eating other people's lunches? Well, stop it!
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around every once in a while, you just might miss it.
Pretty much any line from Al Pacino in any movie.
I'm the dude, man.
Vaya con Dios.
You're not just trying to draw a psycho pension. You really are crazy.
I'm hungry.
I suddenly remember my Charlemagne. Let my armies become the rocks and the trees and the birds in the sky.
If I'm curt with you, it's because time is a factor. I think fast, I talk fast, and I need you guys to act fast if you want to get out of this. So pretty please, with sugar on top. Clean the f***ing car.
You know, sometimes content, sometimes guests, but I just hope people are enjoying the conversations because we've been going for quite a while. And so I got to a point, June 5th, 2013, I started the podcasting and my goal was twice a month and maybe a written review occasionally, but it took a long time to learn how to edit an hour and a half long podcast. And fortunately, somewhere along the way, I got a Facebook message, I believe, from Josh Crabb. And
he saved the day.
And that's kind of where I want Josh to jump into this story.
He is such a cool guy.
Yeah, so so Josh sent me a Facebook message. And Josh, this is the time where I'd love for you to kind of tell people kind of like where you're from, what got you into film or film and theology or, you know, engaging kind of culture this way. And then specifically, what was your route into real world theology, being part of the staff here?
Yeah, cool. Well, where I'm from is Wisconsin.
it's a cheesehead.
So all born, bred and always lived here and stuff. So, kind of like my on-ramp was just, I think it was like 2012. I just started writing just kind of on my own personal blog. It was really something more I shared with my friends, just writing about movies and all kinds of stuff. And in the process of just kind of continuing to put feelers out there on, you know, where that was going to go. And I really like writing. Like I really enjoy it. Like we kind of joked earlier about how I write a lot. But I really enjoy sitting down and doing that every single week. So the day that the joy is sapped out of that is the day I'll stop doing it. but I really enjoy doing that a lot. So, I just want an opportunity to be able to write every single day. So I just started a blog. That's what a lot of people do when they just want an opportunity to write. And so, that kind of led me down different paths and reading different things. And that's, you know, how I already mentioned, I sort of stumbled upon real world theology. And I really was connecting, like I was a part of a church plant. I was studying to be a pastor. I am one now, at Appleton Gospel in Appleton, Wisconsin. Actually, hopefully this would be kind of sad if it didn't happen, but tomorrow I'm actually going to go before the ministerial board to get licensed as a pastor within our denomination. And so hopefully, like when you listen to this podcast, I'm not crying in a corner because they sent me home shamefully in like shame. So
shamefully and shame.
And shamefully and shame. Mm-hmm.
So anyways, you know, I always cared about connecting the movies I was watching to the themes. Like, I always grew up on movies. My dad loved watching movies on Friday nights, and my group of friends were a bunch of, you know, cinephiles, and it, you know, just kind of like the whole movie thing runs in our family. Like my sister, who's graduating this year, is going into acting, and my older sister, or she's not older than me, but she's the older of the two sisters, is going to USC in the fall for her master's degree in screenwriting. So we've just got like kind of this movie thing going on in our family. And so I was just writing about it, and, you know, I was doing all that. And I decided that in the midst of all of that, I was going to launch a website and a podcast as well. And so I started doing that, and like instantly, like right after that, Fizz and I connected personally. You know, I'd already been listening to the show and interacting with, you know, in the comments section and over other things as well in the past. And, you know, Fizz just kind of made the big ask, basically just co-opting what I was hoping. I don't think I've ever told you this, Fizz, but I was totally hoping that you would say that, because I did not I would have done it. I would have kept doing the podcast, but, you know, and doing all that other stuff that I was doing. But it just made so much more sense to just, you know, Voltron it up and combine our powers and stuff and get to work. So, and it worked out so well and just kind of fit exactly what Real World Theology needed. And so I joined up and just started doing it. You know, I'd barely gotten my own website up, and I was just like, why wouldn't I do this? So we went for it. And it's really crazy to think that, you know, when we started that, you know, the first post I ever had on there was the joking title of, you know, Real World Theology, Dawn of Just More Content, kind of like on a joke of what they had recently just announced, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice is the title of that movie. And it's just, it just came out like a couple of months ago. And the first post we ever had, I ever did on there, was kind of a joke on that title way back in 2014. So anywho, nice. You know, so I got started and have been a part of that, have been a part of this site ever since. And apparently have done laps around everyone else as far as posts. So,
yeah, you have.
No joke.
But, you know, that's essentially how I've been involved and been very, very involved and love being a part of this ever since then.
Yeah, it was really great. I mean, I obviously I'm going to say this many, many times on this episode, but it still blew my mind that anyone would want to do this with me. And when Josh sent me that message and said, hey, I really appreciate your podcast. I also, you know, was really kind of inspired by James Harleman kind of paving the way, and you know, some other people trying to do this same thing.
Yeah.
So thanks. I'm going to try to start a website. I'm going to try to start a podcast. You partially inspired me. And I go and I look and I'm like, man, he's putting all this effort into something. It kind of already started. But how do I ask someone? I mean, because it'll be the same thing if someone asked me, you know, how do I ask someone, like, do you want to, like, are our visions the same? Like, do we want to see the same thing here?
Did we just become best friends?
Yeah, did we just are our mothers both named Martha? like what is going on here? And just, you know, because like I said, he just started the website, and I was like, I don't want to ask you to give any of this up. I know you just recorded episode one of your podcast, but does this interest you at all? And so it was just, I don't know. I remember going and telling my wife, I think like the next day, when you'd said like, oh, that'd be great. And I was like, this is so weird. I just like felt so weird that like, yeah, cause someone would want to come and like I said, jump on board. But that's how I've met most of the people in this. Like I said, I knew a couple people around here, but around where I live in Greensboro, North Carolina, but I didn't really have a ton of people. So anytime I needed a guest, if I didn't just want to have the same three people on every episode, I had to start going and doing those searches that I'm guessing, you know, Josh was doing as well. Like, you know, film, theology, name of movie, and just finding these sites and finding people, who were, talking about movies or posting about it. You know, like I said, there still weren't a lot of podcasts. I remember reaching out to, like Wade Bearden, Because I found like one of his reviews like on this like obscure blog that had kind of stopped, and he was still kind of posting stuff at his site. And I was like, hey, this might sound really weird, but would you like to be on a podcast? And, you know, Wade was like, I've never been on a podcast before, you know? and so now, you know, Wade, has a really great podcast over at Christ in Pop Culture. And just to meet people, in these weird, weird, wacky ways has been so fun. And, one of those people that I met, in a weird, wacky kind of, just finding them on the internet was, Blaine Grimes. How wonderful of a segue that was. So Blaine, where are you from? What got you into film, and how did you come on board with Real World Theology?
So where I'm from a town in the Texas Panhandle called Lubbock, Texas. And how did you find me? I was writing for another site at the time. I guess this was a year and a couple of months ago, and just kind of doing my thing, writing over there.
Just and imagine you day, like just moving your hands over a keyboard, doing my thing.
Exactly. And one day we got an email in our inbox from this guy named Mikey, who wanted to see if maybe we wanted to collaborate on some stuff, write a review over there. They'd write a review over at our place, maybe come on a podcast or something like that. And I took Mikey up on that offer. I think my first review for Real World Theology, the first thing I ever did for Real World Theology was for It Follows.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was actually funny because of its really intense subject matter, I was kind of nervous because I didn't know if, in Real World Theology, if you were more like focus on the family type thing or what. And so I was kind of nervous about doing It Follows. In fact, I think I even emailed you and was like, hey, is it okay if I do this for you? You were like, sure. Cause of course you're really liberal.
I'm super liberal.
And so you were okay with it, of course. And that was the first thing I did. And then shortly after that, you asked me if I wanted to come on the Mad Max Fury Road podcast, and I did that. And then things just sort of started to snowball, and I was on a couple of more podcasts and started writing some more reviews. And then next thing I knew, I was a contributor and writing pretty regularly. And then last December, you asked, in fact, right around the time of the Star Wars podcast, you asked me if I wanted to maybe think about doing a podcast with you guys and coming on as actual staff. And I did, and I was really excited and happy about it. And so I came on, and we are where we are now today.
Hmm. I like to think that the It Follows review is kind of like a gateway post.
Exactly. Yeah.
Into all things evil. Now he does movies mm-hmm. that are endorsed by the satanic cult. So
that's right. Mm.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Well,
and Swedish people.
And Swedish people, yeah. And
Swedish people. Which is potato, potato, really. Oh. No offense to Swedish people out there. That was completely a joke. But Real World Theology does not reflect the Judaics. The thing I loved about that conversation that we had, somewhere, like I said, it was like November, early December or something like that. I feel like we were having a conversation after one of the episodes we recorded, and you said something like, yeah, I'm really enjoying podcasting.
Yeah.
And I think I want to start my own podcast.
Yeah.
And I said, that's awesome. Right. Because podcasts are great. And, I think I kind of left it at that, but then I want to say that it was later that I said, you said that you'd like to start a podcast, but do you actually have any ideas for anything specific that you want to do? And like I said, I know I'm probably paraphrasing our conversation, but what I kind of remember it being like was something to the effect of, no, but I just know I really want to have one, you know, like I really yeah. want to do one, you know, almost to the point where it's like, it doesn't matter just because this is so enjoyable. And I said, I've got a couple ideas.
Yeah.
And you foolishly let me pitch them to you. So that's great. And I, oh, Like I said, I've been wanting, we get so many requests. So many requests. Hey guys, can you review this movie? And I'd always have to wait for special occasions to do older stuff or even TV shows, you know, to break from kind of our pattern.
Even when
I think it was, I want to say it was the summer of 2014, maybe. I said, okay, just because there's so many movies come out in the summer, we're going to go to 3 episodes, a month for the next 3 months, just to kind of see how it goes, to try to cover everything. And we got such positive feedback that it became a 3-episode-a-month show. And I was like, what would it take to get that 4th episode? We could do one older movie. I'll do that. And then I actually, you know, looked around at my time and was like, this is just not going to happen. But, you know, every week I was getting emails or Facebook messages or, you know, Facebook group messages saying, oh, will you guys do, you know, Batman, or we guys do Back to the Future, or when are we going to get, you know, a Shawshank Redemption episode, or I love this movie from, you know, 1993. And I'm just like, when, I don't know. I don't know when we're going to do it. And you just picked up that ball and struck out everybody. So
it's been fun too. And I get that makes sense, because when we did the poll a couple of months ago to determine what movie we were going to do in May, the vote was really, really close. I think Shawshank Redemption, which won, it still only won by one vote, and everything else was tied. Mm-hmm. So it seems like there are a ton of older movies that people just really want to hear us talk about.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Well, and the benefit is that, you know, the goal of the Real World Theology podcast, or one of its main goals, is to try to discuss the movies that are currently engaging our culture, that are currently telling narratives that are popular in the present. And that leaves us very little time to go back and talk about things that have shaped us in the past. And so Real World Rewind gets to do that. Not only that, but it gets to be an even worse tongue twister than trying to say Real World Theology.
Exactly. So,
yeah, and that's what it's all about. But about the same time, we were fortunate enough to kind of have Blaine gateway drug himself into Real World Theology. We also started having conversations with Gene.
That's right.
And Gene has been invaluable in his contributions to Real World Theology. So I ask you, Gene, would you let everyone know kind of where you're from, what your history with film and film theology are, and kind of how that got you to Real World Theology?
Yeah, so I'm from Lebanon, Indiana, which is kind of central Indiana, not too far from Indy. And, you know, I talked a little bit. I'm going to refer everybody to Blaine's podcast, where he and I talked about Return of the King, because I talked a little bit there about kind of my transition from just viewing movies as like a college kid looking for the coolest explosion and the hottest girls and all these things, to becoming a Christian and then viewing movies through a different lens. And I kind of talked about that a lot on Blaine's podcast
what
there.
What kind of lens? Was it a clear lens?
It was a clear lens, a much more clear lens. That's a reference to another podcast I do, folks, about apologetics.
Again, like tattoos, man. All the podcasts.
That's right. And I don't run that one, though. I'm a guest on, or I'm a co-host on there. So that's a good one. Clearlens.org, folks. Check it out. So shameless plug is over. And so it's really funny that, you know, you were talking about like the very beginning of 2013 is when you started the podcast, like full on, like went for it. And it was very nearly that same date. It was actually January 9th in 2013, where I started the blog that I was running prior to being with you on Real World Theology, which was Let There Be Movies. Literally January 9th, 2013 was our first like official post. You know, we kind of shared it with everybody. And so it's amazing, like
chronologically the time frames there that we're talking about. You starting up with that, Josh starting his thing, and I'm starting Let There Be Movies, and so that's a really amazing coincidence there. So, but before that, I was in late 2012. I went to an apologetics conference up in Wisconsin, Josh, in southern Wisconsin, and I was in a breakout session, and they were talking about how to reach out across the internet, like on, you know, Facebook or on message groups, in forums, chat forums and stuff, and how to kind of the best way to approach people, the best way to talk to people about Jesus and without coming across like a total jerk and judgmental and all this stuff. And one of the things that the guy leading that breakout session said, and it always stick with me, he says, write about what you love. And I just got to thinking right there. I was like, well, what do I love? And the first thing that came to mind was
Jesus.
Well, Jesus, of course. That's why I'm at the conference, right? But he's talking about like inserting your Christian opinion into culture in things that you're interested in. And so movies came to mind. And I'm like, boy, I could do that. There's plenty of movies where I often have thoughts about, this really impacts our view on this or that thing. And this is a sign of what people are thinking on such and such issue or whatever. And so I just thought about that for a little while. And I talked with some friends about starting to, you know, blog about movies, like seriously trying to go for it. And I did a lot of exactly what you were saying, Mike. I was looking for other blogs or websites that were doing the same thing. And I was finding a lot of what you talked about, places that were giving a lot of content advisory notices, but not necessarily tackling any really deeper things in the film. I think it was at that time I came across More Than One Lesson, which for a long time was like my main thing to get that type of insight. So I got together with some friends and we started Let There Be Movies, and that was going from 2013 until about midway through 2015. I think I reached out to you about each of us doing reviews on each other's sites, like one every quarter or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I know you did Fast and Furious 7 for us, and I did, I think, Get Low and Big Fish for you guys. And so we were doing that for a little bit, and then you asked me, I think, if I wanted to merge, like put together my crew with your crew kind of thing.
Well, I mean, tactful than that, but.
Well, sure. I could read the whole thing, but. So I was like, I like that idea because I feel like we could really drive a bigger audience if we're going together. Plus you have the podcast. And I've got these other couple features that I think would be cool to bring on board. And I really thought about it for a long time. It might've been 5 or 6 weeks before I even got back to you about that. I talked to my wife about it. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't want to ditch the people I'm with now, mm-hmm. but I really like this opportunity. I love what they put out. I love their podcast. And so I really, really thought about it and prayed about it. And I talked to people at Let There Be Movies, and a couple of them have come on board, and the rest is history. I mean, started really in December 2015 or in January of this year, mm-hmm. Just doing regular things together, you know, hopping on board, editing stuff, whatnot. So,
yeah, I mean, and that's the hardest part, because it's very similar to kind of reaching out to Josh, because when you see someone pouring a lot of love into their creative outlet, you never want to just be like, hey, you want to abandon that,
right,
and do something different or something. Right. Is it the same? Maybe, you know, and especially when someone's like I love being a driving force behind Real World Theology. And I would be scared to death if someone invited me to something else that I would not have creative input into that.
Right.
And it's not that people weren't going to Let There Be Movies. You know, you guys had a good crowd, a lot of good interactions, a lot of great conversations that you'd started. You know, the Moral Dilemma dialogues that you'd done over there had gotten really good response. Mm-hmm. And I think like I said, I can't remember exactly how I put it, though. I'm sure I can look back in our Facebook conversations, but just kind of wondering, like, what is your vision? Like, what do you want to do more than anything else? And are you able?
I remember that being.
Yeah,
I
are you able to do that? Yes. Yeah, because I mean that's what I want you. Because like we could all now, as we post our 100th episode of the Real World Theology Podcast, you can. I want to say that without even thinking too hard, I could probably think of 6 or 7 film and theology podcasts that now exist. Most of them having started within the last year. And lots of them slightly different visions, slightly different goals. Some of them only podcasts, some of them, maybe experimenting with podcasts, but mostly a written review site. You know, some of them, like some different parts of the pendulum, or even not even trying to be on the pendulum at all. So, you know, deciding to give some of that away, I realized was just as hard as hopefully accepting, being a part of something else. And, I really appreciated how thoughtful you were about that entire process. Because at first it was like when I invited Josh, I kind of said, I'm giving you, you know, I'm not micromanaging this. You do your thing. You are talented at doing something. Go do it. I'm going to give that piece away. And I was hesitant. Anytime you do that, you know, with anything that you're doing creatively. And when I saw how much time and thought and prayer you were putting into it, I just felt really confident that it was one of those things that was hopefully timely and just kind of meant to be. And the exciting thing to me is that, kind of like you said, even though probably since the middle of 2015, middle of last year, kind of coming up on about a year since we were probably starting that conversation, the guys and gal that have come over from Let There Be Movies, and you have really only been contributing since the beginning of this year.
Right.
And I feel like that, you know, that those floodgates are just starting to crack open, and I'm really excited to see kind of how that keeps growing.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to get more involvement there. And it was a big decision. I mean, I feel like it was something I wanted to do, but I didn't want to ditch the people I was with. And I didn't want them to feel like I was ditching them. I wanted to bring them along and say, hey, this is something we have an opportunity to do. It's not just me. So it was like, it's kind of funny. It was sort of like I was auditioning for this to happen, you know, like, hey, Mikey wants to do this. And he says, we can still do this and this and this, and we'll have to do this and this. What do you guys think? And then the questions came back and I was like, hey, Mikey, here's what they said.
I was like, well, this is my final offer.
Right. It was a fun time. It was exciting, and I like where we're at with it. You know, I don't feel like anybody got shoved out or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I think we're bringing more minds to the table to discuss these things, and hopefully bring more people along with us to listen in to the conversation and hopefully get involved with it as well.
Mm. Well, and like I said, I'm excited about the future.
Definitely.
What
would that future be, Mikey?
What a great question, Gene. I'm so glad you asked. I haven't even really thought about it, but if I had to say, I'd just, oh, look at these notes. I think that the thing that I've really loved about Real World Theology is that we've always been growing. Because there are so many ways that you can engage culture, you can engage arts and entertainment, you can spark conversation, and there's so many ways that you can just do something as simple as talk about a film, mm-hmm. from the most in-depth thing to the most surfacey, just kind of like, why was it so much fun? And because that is a truth, it's always easy to add new things. And I don't want to get gimmicky, but I have seen, like I said, it's been 3 years or kind of 3.5 if you look for the launch of the site and the stuff we've added, the people we've added. I hope that we continue reaching out and we find even more writers, because the more people we find, like, I know it's like almost a cliche at this point, but we really do want to get more people involved in the conversation. I have personally given a lot of thought over the past month, kind of saying, is it a good or a bad thing that just like I said, I could name tons of film and theology podcasts that have just started in the past year. Is that bad because, you know, they're kind of maybe splitting audience? People only have time to listen to so much. Or is it good? Because honestly, like, why are we doing this? And it's because we want more people to think carefully about the entertainment that they consume. Think about the stories that they're being told and really kind of be thoughtful about how they're shaping the culture around them and in them. And so at this point, it's almost like the more the merrier. It's kind of like you would rarely begrudge another church being planted, you know?
Right.
So kind of with that said, I hope that it's easier to find more writers. I mean, if you're listening to this episode and you've ever wanted to review a film from, you know, somewhere along that pendulum that I described, you know, where you're not just hitting one or the other, like, we would love to entertain that. We would love to get you involved in a conversation. If you want to be on an episode of Real World Theology, that is not necessarily an impossible dream. I mean, like, people will ask, and I say, hey, if you're not too nervous behind a microphone and you can even moderately or semi-coherently communicate a thought about a film, whether it's its themes or its critical merits, then you are probably someone who can have a conversation about a film on Real World Theology. I mean, it's slightly more complicated than that, but that, I mean, that's the general, that's like to get your foot in the door. And one of the things that I really like to focus on in Real World Theology is the fact that, again, this is different than I was taught. You know, we keep going back to the kind of film and theology almost seminars that James Harleman did. James Harleman is really great. I mean, he's a great pastor. And what that means is he can watch a film and then he can give you a 30-minute homily, weaving through the themes of the film. And sure, he can answer questions, but he's more or less giving you a lesson based from the film. And Real World Theology, we're starting conversations under the impression that anyone could be a part of it. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to have, you know, read 300 issues of Batman comics to talk about Batman. You don't have to have seen every single iteration of Superman to have a conversation about Superman. You know, you don't have to have gone through Martin Scorsese's entire catalog of film, you know, to talk about whatever the latest Scorsese film is.
Right.
Because that's not what you do with your friends. That's not what you do when you're, you know, kind of shooting the breeze or having conversations. And so, like I said, it's always meant to not be too haughty, but to have some meat. So I hope that we're having more conversations over the next couple of years. I am so excited to see where this podcast and what the staff or what Real World Theology looks like at 200 episodes. I'm hoping that somewhere in the next next bit, we find either I find more time or we find someone who wants to start doing maybe some quick video reviews for us. Just giving us, a 5-minute summary of a film and some of its themes, maybe even teasing it for the podcast. I would love to get to the place where the podcast can live stream. Like everyone knows that on, you know, Tuesday night at, you know, 9 p.m. Eastern time, we're going to live stream a show and people can watch it and they can ask questions. I mean, like, these are things that I would love to say. I'd love more people, more guests. You know, there are so many people that I have yet to have time to reach out to be on the show that I know you as listeners are reading their reviews right now and loving the things they have to say about film. And I want those people on the show. I'm hoping that we can start interviewing people who are talking about film, people who are writing books about film and theology, people who are writing films and exploring story. I want to interview them. James Harleman's podcast, or James Harleman's episode of this this podcast, where I got to go and interview him, is one of my favorites. Not because I just got to interview someone who'd kind of lit this fire in me, but because I really enjoy just talking about people, much like this episode, talking about why people love film in the first place, outside of having to kind of cage our conversation about a specific film. So, you know, if you're out there and you want to start a new podcast and it kind of fits under the umbrella of what we do with a different flavor, you know, that would be awesome. I hope we find people who want to do this. I hope that there's another Blaine Grimes out there who just wants to start a podcast and loves some specific piece of film or time period or way of looking at arts and entertainment that lines up with our pendulum, and we can help that happen. You know, like I don't want people to think that we are this entity that they are not a part of. People listening to this show, people asking questions about each episode, people suggesting things for us to do. Like, you know, I thank the listeners at the end of each show for a reason, because you make this show happen. People were sending me Facebook messages and asking for things. Those are the conversations we want to have. So, you know, I feel like I'm scattershotting, or just like shooting a shotgun at the wall of ideas here. But these are all things that I think are in the realm of possibility for us. You know, I remember a time when I was talking to Josh, and we were like, wouldn't it be wacky if we had so much content that we could post something every day of the week?
You know, that'll never happen.
That'll never happen. But, you know, now there is rare a day that we don't at least have one or two things to put out there for you guys. And that blows my mind. So just seeing how far we've come in the past year, how far we've come from the year before that, and from where this started in February of 2013, it's, like I said, it continues to blow my mind. And I'm going to use that phrase over and over again, ad nauseum, because it is totally apt. So that's, like I said, I don't know when any of those things will happen. I don't know if any of those things will happen, but I hope we're always growing and adding more people to the conversation. So the last thing I want to do before we end our part of the podcast with the staff team is ask them one more getting to know you question, because like this is what this portion of the podcast is about. So the question that I'll ask each of you guys is, if you could be a character from any movie, who would it be and why? Josh, I think we'll start with you.
Yeah. Well, this question I don't have to think about for more than like a second, because since I was 5 years old, I've wanted to be Luke Skywalker.
Because you have a thing for your sister? I'm just saying, you kind of walked. Walked right into it, and then
clearly that was retconned a long time ago. That he didn't know what he was doing. He was weak in the force still. Yeah, right, sure whatever. He was. Okay, but I mean, for all the most obvious reasons, from being like the centerpiece of the hero's journey, you know, because Star Wars is so cool, because he goes from being a nobody to the hero of the rebellion and the new hero of the Jedi. And, you know, obviously all of this coming before episode 7, even though he's still the hero of the galaxy, except he's hiding out now. So we'll find out what happened to him later. But, you know, I mean, it's really easy when, you know, you say Luke Skywalker, people are like, oh, okay. Yeah, they know why you're thinking those things. And so it's like, you know, I just, whenever I hear that music where he's looking out the binary sunset, where he's looking out at the twin suns, I'm like, man, that reminds me of like every time I'd ever be anywhere where there's a sunset when I was a kid, and I'd just be like, listen to that music in my head.
All slow.
It's like, it is time for an adventure, my friends.
Just picture Josh standing in a sunset, like in his own mind, all this is happening, and his friends are like, Josh, come on, what are you doing?
Guys, hang on, the song's not done yet.
Yeah. Don't you see the sun is setting?
I was going to go to Tashi Station to pick up power converters.
Oh, man. Well, I think that's a pretty good explanation. I mean, there's all kinds of assumptions why anyone would be Luke Skywalker. You know, people just mainly want to be the hero. But I think it harkens back to something more, Josh.
It really does.
Well, we certainly learned nothing about Josh that we didn't know already. So, Blaine, do you want to be Constable Zuvia?
I think I would be Constable Zuvia. If I could.
Nice.
Really. Because I'm kind of an introvert, so I wouldn't have to have much screen time. It would be...
Or any and all.
But I could have a really good action figure. No. I was going to make that joke, and you totally called it.
I didn't actually think you...
I was totally going to make that joke.
Oh, I just ruined everything. Gosh.
No, if I could be anyone, I would probably say Indiana Jones. Because I like to teach, and I am a teacher, and I want to be a teacher for a long time. And I'm also kind of obsessed with treasure hunting. And I get to do teaching now, but I feel like if I could be Indiana Jones, I would get to tack the treasure hunting on, and it would be an added bonus. And it doesn't really seem like Indy has to do a lot of grading. Like, we never see any grading on a plane or in great a car point. Chase or anything like that.
So he's gets busy to publishing. Teach. He's busy publishing.
Yeah, he could be publishing. But it seems like he gets to do the really fun stuff. Like, he gets to just do the teaching, doesn't have to grade, and he still gets to go on all these adventures. So that would be my choice.
That's a pretty good choice. Gene, who's it going to be? Oh,
man. Can I have three answers? Is that good?
Sure, why not? We didn't really set out rules. The main goal of this question is to get to know the staff better. So if those three answers help us really understand who you are, then yes.
They will a little. Okay, I have a status quo answer that I'll give, like, knee-jerk answer to this question anytime anyone asks me. And that is Neo from The Matrix. That's my favorite movie. Of course, I want to be the one, Neo. And I have a current events answer for whatever's going on at the time. So right now, that would be Mr. Smith from Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, because who doesn't want a political representative that is, you know, truthful and upstanding and stands for the little man, and he wants to do what's right, and he's fighting for you and all this stuff. And we don't have anybody that does that right now. So,
wait, is this the Donald Trump biopic?
Yeah, except the exact opposite. So. No, that's my current event. No, my real answer is I thought about this for a little bit, and it's probably influenced by right now I'm trying to get my son to be interested in watching this movie, and he's not at all. So I'm a little like, come on, you want to watch it. You know you do. And that is I would want to be Wesley from The Princess Bride. The dude is the full package. He can run a farm. He is a swordsman. He's witty and intelligent. He's a pirate, and he's romantic. He fights for true love, and he survived a death torture device. I don't know. He's confident. He's chivalrous, and he probably won prom king, so I want to be Wesley.
That works. Because I would say Wesley was in consideration.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, because usually when you think of who you'd want to be, it's probably someone in most cases from one of your favorite movies, right? Because probably one of the reasons it's your favorite movie is because it has a character that you really love.
Yeah.
I mean, there obviously are exceptions, but I mean, you know, I'm just saying.
Yeah, definitely.
So, too bad no one wants to know what mine is.
That is too bad. Mikey, we should just end it right now.
What do you want to be?
Actually, I really did not think about it because I was so concerned about asking you guys that I was like, oh, yeah, I guess someone will probably ask me. Or I'd have to like come up with some great, amazing segue as I am used to doing. it kind of bummed me out when I think of who I'd like to be, because almost all the people that I wanted to be died in the movies.
Oh, that's not good.
That is.
You know, like,
I don't know. It depends on the way you die, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, hopefully. Actually, I was just having this conversation with a friend yesterday. He was talking about one of his frustrations with culture is that the people's obsession with living forever, and people are simply living too long, like well past the time that they should have probably died. And, you know, he's saying it, and it sounds very kind of blunt to actually verbalize it. But I think one of the things that we're called to do, because he wasn't really coming at it from like a Christian perspective, just like a kind of a practical kind of drain on society kind of perspective. And I was like, well, from a Christian perspective, I think we're kind of supposed to prepare ourselves for a good death and not be afraid of death. And so I think a good death is something that we could all pray for. So, I mean, with that saying, that would probably put me in the realm of, the priest from Calvary or, you know, what Marcus Aurelius, just things like that, just people who are willing to believe in something so passionately that giving their life for it isn't out of the question.
Right.
So if I have to pick people like that who live, most of what comes to mind is Captain America. I think I'd like to be Captain America. I love the Captain America movies as some of my favorite Marvel films. And the only reason that I wouldn't say Captain America right now is because it's so right now that it would seem like I've never seen any other movies and I'm just picking like superhero movies.
Like, what's the latest movie out? Okay, I'll be that guy.
Yeah. So if I'm going to pick another good guy, then I'm just going to say Robin of Loxley from Robin Hood Men in Tights. Because, again, it's just Wesley.
Oh, Men in Tights?
Yeah. It's Wesley in a funnier package, you know?
Oh, that's great.
He can fight. He can banter.
I thought you were going to say, you know, the Kevin Costner Robin. And I was like,
nope.
Ready for like a serious comment. And you're like, Men in Tights.
Men in Tights. Yeah, all the way. Yeah. I think the problem with me is almost every character that I really want to be from entertainment is from a TV show. And the only way that I can circumvent that rule is that I want to be Captain Picard. So, so since I can't be Captain Picard, I'll just have a son name him Captain Picard.
Nice.
So anyway, I love people who love or are very fervent in their belief. Even if I don't always believe what they believe, but, you know, they're not wishy-washy.
Right.
So, well, I hope everyone's learned quite a lot about the staff at Real World Theology. I hope you've learned or we've answered any question you have about where the website, where the podcast, where the staff has come from. I hope you've learned a little about us and our quirky personalities and about how Blaine doesn't ever shut up. Oh, my gosh. Just all the time with the talking. And we'll probably say goodbye here in just a second, but the next portion of, or the second portion of this episode, I asked a lot of people who have either guessed it or contributed to the show, or to the site to send in some audio, just with the 100th episode in mind, asking questions like, why do you love film? How did you get involved with Real World Theology? What's your favorite film? And then, you know, people's favorite lines, if they could be any character. Lots of the questions that hopefully we've kind of gone over in a little bit more depth. I've asked some of these people to write in. So hopefully you'll be hearing from some of your favorite guests and contributors over the past 3 years that have helped make Real World Theology what it is. But for now, in preparation for that part of the show, we will say goodbye to Josh. Goodbye, Josh.
See you guys later. Thanks for being a part.
Goodbye, Blaine.
Goodbye, Constable Zuvio.
And goodbye, Gene.
As you wish.
So, and for me temporarily, I will leave you with what I usually say, which is, remember that story is powerful, entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
Hey, Real World Theology, this is Wade Bearden of Christ and Pop Culture and the Seeing and Believing podcast. You know, it was about 2 years ago that I got an email from Fizz, and he had found me on my blog and saw that I was a Christian writer who talked about film, and he said, hey, would you love to come on the podcast? I didn't know who he was. I hadn't heard of the podcast at the time. But I said, yes, that was actually my very first podcast experience. And I've gone on to start my own podcast, Seeing and Believing, with my co-host Kevin McLenathan. But I'll always remember the very first podcast I was on was with Real World Theology. You know, it was kind of an interesting experience because I knew that Fizz recorded before the review started, but I thought he would tell me. And so I was talking away, talking. Come to find out later, it would all end up in the podcast. So it was good that I didn't talk bad about anyone. There are a lot of things that I like about movies. You know, various times in my life when I've experienced something difficult, maybe I've lost someone, or Maybe I lost a job. Movies were there, and they were always this this transportation into a new world. Ever since I was a kid, I used to love science fiction films and love action movies because those types of things don't happen to me personally, right? But I could experience that through the world of film. I also love that film has an opportunity to communicate what is meaningful about the human existence, what is meaningful about our lives and how we reach and touch other people, and also communicating these huge philosophical, theological ideas through the lens of a story, through the lens of a real world. Movies can tell us so much about the people around us. It can tell us so much about God by simply looking at someone's life, looking at a narrative and a story. Movies create empathy. You know, I've had an opportunity to visit numerous countries all around the world from my living room and to get to know people that I'll never meet because of film. And it's helped me to realize that the people around the world that I read about on the internet or I see on the news, they're real people and they have real stories. And I hope that I can visit many of the places, and I have visited some of the places of these movies that I've seen. And I hope that watching the movies will help me to love others deeply and love others compassionately. You know, I don't know if I'm old enough to have a favorite movie, because there's still so many movies that I have not seen. I think right now one of my favorites, at least, is Raiders of the Lost Ark. I love Indiana Jones. It's a fun adventure film, but yet the characters are real. They're right there, and they have such charisma. I remember the first time I ever watched Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I knew it was a classic, but I was young and I didn't know the ending. And at the end, they open up the Ark of the Covenant. And I remember getting to the end of that movie and saying to myself, as a kid, you know, if you think about it, God's kind of the hero in this movie. Someone should write about Raiders of the Lost Ark. And as I grew up, I remember thinking back to that and kind of that the way that I viewed that film and how even those moments influenced me to where I am today. And I can always go back to Indiana Jones. I love Indiana Jones. It's one of my favorite movies. So if I had to choose what character I would be in a film and why, the first character that comes to mind right off the bat is a robot named BB-8. You know, when it looked like the First Order was going to take over the galaxy, there was one thing standing in their way, and that was my man, BB-8. Real World Theology, I want to tell you guys, happy 100th episode. I love all of you. Keep doing the good work. We're listening. I'm listening. Here's to 100 more.
Hi, this is Joel Mayward, and I'm a film critic for cinemayward.com. And my connection with Real World Theology came about a year ago when Josh emailed me and asked me to be a part of the podcast. And I had a conversation with Mikey and Blaine Grimes about Tomorrowland. And ever since then, I've been following along and part of the Real World Theology community of film critics and people who are talking about movies. And what I love about movies is they're this art form that seems to blend all different types of art forms together. There's story involved, there's image, there's music, there's just ideas and themes and ways that films communicate that are unique and have captured our cultural imagination and I think have the power to legitimately change and move us. I love movies because they remind us that there's something bigger out there. We get wrapped up in these giant imaginative stories or captivating images, and they also foster empathy. Roger Ebert once called films empathy machines, that they're ways of communicating about other people, other walks of life, and connecting with them. I think they can be healing. I think they can be cathartic. I think they can be unhealthy if they're taken to an extreme, but so far this personal addiction of mine to film has been one that I found incredibly rewarding and redeeming. What's my favorite film of all time? And I could list so many different movies. It depends on the day. Films like Casablanca, films like Metropolis, films like Rashomon. I love the French film Amelie, the classic Star Wars, the original trilogy. That's the film that really captured my imagination. But the I think my all-time favorite film, if I can say this publicly and make it official, is Terrence Malick's The Tree of Life. It's a poem and a prayer. It's a theological exploration. It is theology. It's doing theology on film. It's akin to the book of Job. It's akin to the entire story of Scripture. It's just a beautiful and moving film, and one that I turn back to regularly. So that's why I love movies. I love the way that they shape and change and transform me personally and the way that they shape and transform our world. And I'm grateful for a community like Real World Theology where we can have deep conversations about movies and engage our minds and our hearts with the artwork that's out there. So thanks for allowing me to be a part of that conversation.
Hello, this is Joe Darnell, and I have been a guest on Real World Theology. I have a few shows of my own that have nothing to do with movies at the moment. I have, in the past, though, I was one of the creators of the Movieology YouTube show, which became a podcast, which spun off into another show called Movie Bite, where I met Mikey Fissel as a guest on my show. And he asked me to review movies like Cinderella, and that was great. So here I am. Okay, episode 100 of Real World Theology, really serious stuff. Congratulations, guys. You've got this far. Okay, now down to the important things like what is it about movies that you love? What is it about movies that I love? I love their vicarious experience. It's the ability to interact with people, so to speak, that I would otherwise never get to know or meet, and see how they make personal decisions up close and personally, get into their psyche. And that's something you can get from a book, but it takes so much longer to glean that from a book than it does from a movie. And I can cover so many different people's lives in a movie so much faster than I could if I were to try and take up, if I was going to take up really good reading. So I enjoy a good movie because I get to experience things with all different kinds of people. And that's what the entertainment of value affords me. So what is my favorite movie? I would say I've had several favorite movies, but if I have a movie that I can just go back to and again, it's a very subjective one, but I love Tron Legacy for many reasons. It has a lot to do with that I like the metaphor in the movie that we have a father figure that is representative of, you know, God the Father, and he has a son, and he is made in his image, which is really clever and something a movie that can't really pull off very often. Then we have the creation story unfolding with many twists in Tron Legacy. It's also just a beautiful film. It's got great style. It's so cohesive. I am a graphic designer, and I cannot get enough of just how pretty, in a cool way, Tron Legacy actually is. The visual effects are spot on. I appreciate the retro gaming culture, but also this futuristic approach to retro gaming. And at the heart of it, it's a slow-paced film. It's very mindful. For these days, it seems like all the movies are just so fast, and they don't take the time to let you chew on them. And not only is it mindful and slow-paced at times, maybe to a fault, but it's still got action. So it's got action, but also mindfulness, and it's well-paced. Don't remember the last movie that I saw that pulled that off besides Tron Legacy in recent year, and I think it was well done. So if I could be any character from a movie, who would it be and why? Seriously? See, when I was a kid, I wanted to be Superman. When I was a kid, I wanted to be Marty McFly, but I don't really want to be anybody now, because if I'm Marty McFly, I'm going to have to do things I don't really want to do. And if I'm Superman, that sounds too egotistical. Like, who in his right mind is going to say, as a grown man, yeah, I really want to be Superman. If I could be anything, I'd be Superman. I'd like to be the person that's close to these characters. So I would like to be a part of their life, not them themselves. But I like to imagine when I watch a good movie and I'm enjoying the characters, that I'm actually very close. I'm like best friends with these individuals, and that is why I have the chance to know them this up close and personally. So I end up feeling like close friends with any central protagonist by the end of the film. Even if it's not a great film, I feel close to them. Real world theology does exactly what it set out to do, to enjoy entertainment purposefully and to gain a better appreciation of God's nature. It sounds lofty, but at the heart of it, the show is very dynamic and honest. Real world theology has breadth and depth, just like any good movie would have.
Hello, this is Matt Anderson from The Sci-Fi Christian. Just wanted to send in this little message and say happy 100th episode to Fizz and the crew at Real World Theology. Love you guys' show. I've loved being a part of the show on occasion, and so congratulations on hitting 100 episodes. We're reflecting here on movies and our personal tastes, and the very first question is, what is it about movies that I love? And, you know, I've always loved story. I think I became attracted to movies at a really young age, and as I got older, I started to appreciate the messages behind the films a lot more. And I guess for me, I love it when there's this awesome movie, and then afterwards, you and your friends are able to have a fun, maybe philosophical discussion on what was happening in the film and what the filmmaker was trying to say. And yeah, if I think of some of my favorite movie going experiences, it's, yes, it's a fun experience, but there's also something to talk about afterwards. And, you know, I guess that's what your show's all about. So it's a perfect fit for me. How did you get first involved with Real World Theology, and what was your experience like? Okay. Flashback, a couple years back, right before Edge of Tomorrow came out, Fizz and I were talking by email. Now, I think we first met probably because of the Crossover Nexus. So the Crossover Nexus is a network of podcasts. They tend to be kind of geeky Christian podcasts. That will talk about pop culture or theology and philosophy and all that stuff. So there's a bunch of podcasts in that network. Real World Theology and Mind, the Sci-Fi Christian, are both there. Fizz and I are talking. And Fizz, I don't know if you remember this, but the first movie you actually invited me to come onto your show to talk about was The Muppets. And I had to eventually confess to you that I wasn't a huge Muppets fan. Not that I don't like them. I do like them to a certain extent, but they're just, it's not my specialty area. So once I confessed that, I think we continued the email and eventually we worked it out. Edge of Tomorrow, also now known as Live, Die, Repeat. That was my first appearance. And then after that, so that was my first appearance, but in total, I've been on the show 5 times now. Edge of Tomorrow, I did Ant-Man. I was recently on the mini episode for Star Wars where we talked about Attack of the Clones. And I did both Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1 and Part 2. So five times. I can't believe it. It's been a fun ride with you guys. And like I said, congratulations on the 100th episode. I can't wait to be back on the show and talk about more movies and philosophy and theology and fun with you guys. So to what is my favorite movie and why? This is a tough one. If you've listened to my show, you know it's hard for me to pick a very favorite on a lot of things. I can usually give maybe a top five. So I'm just going to throw out a few I like, but then I'll answer your question. So I love Back to the Future. I love The Truman Show. Love Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. When it comes to superhero movies, I'd say The Avengers, the original one, and then just the Dark Knight trilogy in general. Those are my top superhero films. I guess I could go on and on for favorite movies, but I'm going to pick my favorite movie that I discussed on Real World Theology. So this is not an old movie, more recent. I think it just came out 2 years ago. It's called Edge of Tomorrow, starring Tom Cruise. I'm sure there's some people that are like, how is he naming this one? Well, this is my favorite film that I discussed on the Real World Theology podcast. So I love kind of time loop type stories, which we have here. Edge of Tomorrow has a Groundhog's Day type plot happening. It was, the reason I picked this one specifically is because it has that sci-fi element I like. Also, there's some theological stuff we could talk about inside the movie. And I mean, I got to be on Real World Theology. I think I could be wrong. I think this is my first appearance on the show. I'm almost positive. So those are all the reasons that's a favorite film. Okay, so the next question is about giving an impersonation of your favorite line from cinema history. Again, this probably isn't my favorite line of all time, but as I think about lines I've said a lot, I got to go back to a classic, Dumb and Dumber. So growing up, my best friend and I watched this movie a ton of times, and I'm sure I've said probably thousands of times, "So you're saying there's a chance." Next question here is, if you could be a character from any movie, who would it be and why? Well, my instant reaction, I'm not sure if I thought through this, maybe it would change, but my instant reaction is Marty McFly from Back to the Future. He's just a cool character in general. Plus, he has the ability to travel through time. He's got Doc as a friend. I mean, I guess as a second choice, Doc Brown from Back to the Future. Two awesome guys, both can go through time. Not bad. Well, with the help of a time machine, but you get the point. Thanks for having me on today. And just keep up the great work. You guys are doing an awesome job with the show. I really appreciate everything you guys have done.
I guess you could say that I love movies because I'm fascinated with visual storytelling. It always amazes me how a simple camera angle or a glance of an eye or a crescendo of music or the sound of a lightsaber can emit such emotion in somebody. More than that, though, it always has something to say. We don't always like what it has to say, or sometimes it communicates a deep truth of the universe, but every single film from Citizen Kane to Dumb and Dumber has something to say about the way that the world works today. And to me, that's powerful insight for us to understand and to watch and to communicate and to study. Because the truth is, as a Christian, I believe that God's story is so big that it impacts every aspect of our lives and the arts. Now, sometimes films disagree with that. sometimes they're directly in conflict, or sometimes they echo some of the deepest truths that we've heard in Scripture. But I always believe there's something communicated worth engaging. That's why I love movies, because it's a window into our world, and they're always powerful, even bad ones. I first got involved with real-world theology because I was looking for people that felt the same way about films that I did. As a Christian, I wanted to hear from other people who could engage stories in a way that both wrestled with God's truth and what a film is saying. So I started listening, and Mikey and I have connected. He's been on our podcast, and we've got a great relationship, and I really appreciate all that he and his entire team have to say. Real world theology has a real place and a real voice in our podcasting world, if you will. Okay, favorite film in cinema history is a crazy question to ask anybody who cares about movies. I'm sorry, guys, it's just not that easy. So I've narrowed it down to two films, and I think you're going to find they're exactly the same in every possible way. On the one hand, you've got the greatest film of all time, Citizen Kane. Citizen Kane, widely seen as the best film of all time, rightfully so, incredibly directed. So many films exist because of this movie. And on the other hand, you have a film that's very similar in nature and tone, Batman Forever. Again, both stories of people who rose from nothing to build an incredible media empire and completely flame out as a result of their inability to hold on to that power in appropriate ways. So here you go. Two greatest films in cinema history, Citizen Kane, Batman Forever. Favorite line in cinema history is easy. Goldfinger. Do you expect me to talk? No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Hi, this is Rick Lee James of the Voices in My Head podcast, and I wanted to thank Real World Theology for asking these great questions about films and what they mean to us. And it's always been an honor for me to be a guest on Real World and even to listen. There's always some great conversation, and I appreciate the show so much. What is it about movies that you love? The story, I think, that's really the main thing. If there's a story that really moves me, makes me feel something, think deeper, especially if it makes me think deeper about something and helps me connect with my humanity, that's what I really love about movies the most, and just to the places that they can transport you. I think the first time that I got involved with Real World Theology was for the movie... I think it was for The Amazing Spider-Man 2, if I remember correctly. And it was a great experience. I remember we all kind of talked about that film and thought, I think I like that movie. It was one of those like theater-going experiences where you come out of it and you weren't just thrilled with a movie, but you kind of liked it. But then maybe later on you realize, I don't think I like that movie at all, maybe. It was kind of a rough film. So it was a really good experience for me. But my favorite film, at least at the moment of this recording, is actually a film that we talked about on Real World Theology called Calvary. It's a movie that I just can't in one sitting talk about all of the thoughts that come to me from it. It's become my Good Friday movie every year now, because I find it so challenging and so moving. It's a perfect Good Friday movie for me, and that's probably one of the reasons it's my favorite film at this moment. You've asked for an impersonation of your favorite line from cinema history, gosh, I wish I was better prepared to do this. My favorite line from cinema history, I guess I'll just say one of my favorite lines from that movie, from Calvary, and it's Father James talking to his daughter Fiona, and he says, I don't know if you're wanting me to impersonate, by the way, his accent. I really can't do that, but I think there's too much talk about sins and not enough about virtues. What would be your number one? I think forgiveness has been highly underrated. That did not sound like him at all. I'm sorry. I'm not an impersonator, but that's one of my favorite lines from cinema because of the power of forgiveness. Just absolutely love that line. If I could be a character from any movie, who would it be and why? Batman, of course, because always be Batman if you can. Anyway, I hope this is what you wanted, Fizz. I congratulate you on 100 episodes. That's a great accomplishment, and I'm so glad that you've made it. Here's to 100 more for you. And you have a wonderful evening, and God bless. And thank you for allowing me and the Voices in My Head podcast to be a small part of your show.
My name is Reed Lackey. I'm one of the co-hosts of More Than One Lesson podcast at morethanonelesson.com. I was first brought into Real World Theology as a guest for the discussion about Creed, which was the sequel/reboot of the Rocky franchise. And from there, started chatting in the comments threads on Facebook and made some really good friends, most of whom I haven't even been in the same room with. What I love the most about movies is the capacity that they have to create and to explore metaphors for the human condition, the human experience. The really great stories of history, I think, the novels and the poems, they share a quality that you have to understand the language to be able to understand the metaphors. But with films, which they certainly use language, and they often do so to tremendous effect, especially in the hands of great writers, but they can also express something purely using visuals, and they can make that translate to a wider audience. They can speak to a wider experience. And there are elements to our lives that we can't explain, we can't articulate, but there are films that we could watch and say, that's it. That's what we feel like. That's what it feels like to go through that. So the good movies, and most especially the really great movies, they help us understand ourselves, and they help us understand each other a little better when we watch them and when we listen to what they have to say. My favorite film, personally, is The Exorcist. I know that might sound crazy to a bunch of people, but I think the biggest reason for that is that the question of how we deal with the problem of evil is something that I wrestle a lot with. It's a question that I find incredibly compelling, particularly when I look at the cross and what Christ did. And I discover that's how God ultimately dealt with the problem of evil, through sacrificing and laying down his own life. The Exorcist explores this problem directly. It takes it head on. It's also absolutely unflinching. It doesn't even blink or compromise. And I think that's why it's often listed still as the scariest film of all time. But there's times where it's surprisingly tender. And it's really compelling, especially when it's dealing with its characters. And I think that's what gives it a lasting resonance, even beyond the fear that it inspires in people. And I think it should also be noted that that film reaches two big conclusions about the problem of evil. First, it concludes that evil's attack, the assault of evil, is ultimately to make us reject the possibility that we're loved. And I find that to be a really compelling argument. And the second thing is that sometimes the only way we can defeat evil, the evil that we face, whether on a grand scale or on day-to-day lives, is by laying down our own lives. And both of those ideas are central tenets of my own theological understanding. So I love the movie, and I think The Exorcist may always be my favorite. I think if I were going to pick a quote that I'd try to do my best impression of, it would be from Psycho. It's one of my favorite movie lines ever. When Norman Bates is talking to Marion Crane, he knows her as Marion Samuels, and he's telling her about his mother, and he says, "It's not like my mother is a maniac or a raving thing. She just goes a little mad sometimes." We all go a little mad sometimes. Haven't you? Now, if I could be anyone from any film, I think I'd like to be George Bailey from It's a Wonderful Life. It's funny to me how often and how frequently that film is dismissed by my peers and the circle of friends that I talk with. But when I think about the struggle and the idea of wanting to make a difference wanting to be important and feeling like life has denied you that opportunity at every turn, that's something that I hear from so many people struggling on a day-to-day basis with. It's something that I struggle sometimes with. And what I find so beautiful about George Bailey's story is the whole time he thought life was denying him what he so desperately wanted, life was actually giving him that. It was giving him importance. It was giving him treasured relationships. It was giving him value. He had a significant value there. He just never recognized it. And what a beautiful thought it is to me that maybe someday each of us who feel so disappointed with how things have gone in our lives, that we might one day have the scales fall from our eyes and see our value from a heavenly perspective. I want that. I'd love to have that. So I'd love to be George Bailey.
This podcast has been a Real World Theology production. For more information, check out realworldtheology.com. And thanks for listening.
Now this is podcasting. Woo!
I fight and you may die. Run and you live at least a while. And lying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to train all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!